If you imagine the economic social changes that have been outlined tonight by my guest, then you have to imagine a drastic change in politics, because that reflects, of course, what's going on. And so how will American politics change through this period of time? Any projections?
From me, Yours?
Yes.
We were talking a while ago about this new phenomenon that I think we'll be seeing in the years ahead, the formation of what I call a formerly middle class, a large former middle class.
Yes.
And they will be full of grievances and resentment, and they will be bewildered by the loss of their entitlements to a life in a drive-in utopia. And I think that they may even be so angry that they will vote for cornpone Nazis or people like that, people who will make George Bush look very mild indeed in comparison.
Really?
Now, having said that, I have to qualify that by adding that I think that the federal government will become progressively less powerful rather than more powerful in the years ahead. And remember, I said anything big, anything on the large scale,
including government.
Yeah, whether it's government or Walmart or large industrial Cargill-type farming operations, anything big is going to wither during the long emergency. And a lot of my friends are very disturbed about the prospect of a big brother government controlling their lives, you know. I think that we'll be lucky if the federal government can answer the phone 20 years from now. And that, let alone regulate our laws.
All right. First
but
time.
I do think on the local basis, we're liable to see a lot of extremism, and some of it may be quite dangerous, because it will involve things like scapegoating and, blaming our problems on various groups of people. I think, justice is liable to be a lot swifter and cruder. We're going to not tolerate misbehavior, and we're going to deal with it probably fairly swiftly.
You make the world government almost sound good. But first-time caller line, you're on the air with James Howard Kunstler. Good morning.
Right, that was almost a perfect segue you gave me. I can give you three quick examples. You talk about big things withering. You, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer, and all those listening, just finished, as an example, paying via your tax dollars for something big that's withering in Boston. We had a great idea to try and move traffic along by creating the well-known Big Dig. Now we find we're residing to driving wooden pegs into the sidewalls of the Big Dig Tunnel going through Boston Harbor to keep the water out. It simply is failing miserably, and this is a perfect example of big government withering by trying to move traffic, which you simply can't do. When traffic gets to a certain level, there's nothing you can do. Another example, ever tried driving through the 405, known as the Jug Handle in Southern California? What's the government want to do there? Well, let's put up toll booths. The drivers are already paying 50 cents a gallon in taxes. Now they're going to try and sustain or foist tolls on top of that. It simply will fail miserably. You live up in the Lakes region in New York. Isn't it sad to see that some of the lakes down there now are unfishable? There's hydrazine in the water, which turns male animals into female. The hydrazine converts testosterone into progesterone and changes the males into females. These are telltale signs of things that are happening now. We don't have to prognosticate and say, oh, well, this is what's going to happen. These signs are happening around us all over the place, and the sooner people wake up and realize what you're saying is really on target, the better we'll be. The government we elect is the government we get, and unless we're willing to make a drastic change in how things are run, I'm afraid we're going to go down this path sooner than later.
All right. Well, I don't think the American people are at all prepared to make the kinds of choices that are being discussed this morning, I just don't think they are. And
well, there are two points the gentleman made that I think are kind of interesting. You know, one is he's generally describing what I would call the diminishing returns of technology,
mm-hmm.
meaning that, you know, we think that technology is only a benefit in our lives, but in fact, it bites back a lot. And so we have this big project in Boston where we tried to put the expressway underneath the city, and it turned out to be very problematical. You know, this leads to a consideration of another big problem, though. A lot of Americans are confused about the difference between technology and energy. Often in this public discussion, you'll hear people say, new technology will help solve these problems for us.
Right.
But the problem isn't the technology. The problem is the energy that the technology runs on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can find new technology all day long for all sorts of things. You know, everything from, you know, running rock and roll music through your eardrums to, running a Volkswagen on the residue of a French fry machine. But, you know, if you don't have the basic energy to run these things, then it sort of doesn't matter what kind of technology you come up with.
Are you truly convinced, James, that there will not be some technological breakthrough in the area of energy? I mean, that is a possibility.
I would put it differently, although I've said that more or less. What I am saying is that even if some miracle occurs and we discover some source of energy that we hadn't known about before, or some
right.
way of using the things that we've got that we didn't know about before, there will still be this period of hardship and turbulence
True.
That we're going to go through that I call the long emergency. So I see the period itself as being really quite unavoidable. But I wouldn't completely foreclose the idea that the human race will discover some other way of running things.
Right.
It may be.
But even if they do, the transitional period is still going to be that same long emergency.
Yeah, and there's also, you know, quite frankly, the prospect that the carrying capacity of the Earth for the numbers of human beings that are now living on it really has been exceeded. And whatever else happens, we're probably going to have to, die back to a more sustainable population. Now, whether that happens, you know, over several generations or, you know, a millennium or just a couple of decades is a question that's up in the air, and it's not necessarily something that I advocate one way or the other. You know, something will happen, but I wouldn't want to advocate for it one way or the other.
Wildcard Line, you're on the air with James Howard Kunstler. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Esther from New York on WABC.
Yes, Esther.
Yeah, I also think that individualism, the hyper individualism, we should realize that if you give up the
Where'd you go? Let's try it again. Are you still there?
Hello, Art.
Okay, we've got some cross lines here. Is this you, young lady?
I'm here.
Good. Okay, please continue.
Yeah. You mentioned about the synthetic fuels, so I'll go on to another subject. I think that the individualism to drive, you know, 30, 50 miles should be given up because it would be a patriotic thing to do and to keep the American way of life, to be able to go to the drugstore, you know, make these little trips. And also, I think that if they design railroads, that they should make the subway cars or other cars, you know, more human friendly. You do feel like you're giving up, that you're a failure if you go into one of these things. So if they make them prettier and make them, you know, more user friendly, make you feel more important going into them. One example, in the old subway cars, they used to have them like 16 people together in a like a little rectangle, and now you have these long lines, and you really feel like a real failure in them. So if they make these things, you know, more they make people feel more important.
All right. Well, it's a very good point, and you know, but it goes to our leadership. And again, there's a gigantic apparent failure of leadership going on, right?
Well, I don't know if I would attribute that to the design of subway cars.
No, but a move toward a mass transit system. I mean, these are things that only really government can do.
Well, yes, you do need some agreement at all levels of government that these things are necessary. Right now, we're having a debate in Congress about allocating, you know, something like $1.8 billion to saving Amtrak. You know, we're spending $80 billion in Iraq, and a lot of it to fix the sewers and electrical systems of Iraq, and we're not even willing to spend a small fraction of that, maintaining our existing rail system. And you know, it's true, we have a railroad system that the Bulgarians would be ashamed of at this point. And we have to do better. I don't happen to agree with the caller that Americans are going to voluntarily step out of their cars and stop driving individually.
I don't think so.
Just out of patriotism. They will stop doing that when they're compelled to do it by circumstances and not before.
All right. East of the Rockies. Your turn with James Howard Kunstler. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Yes?
It's Michael.
Yes, Michael.
Okay. You are a hard person to get a hold of.
Yes.
Fine for a week, man.
All right. You're through now, Michael, so let her rip.
This is Michael, Fort Walton Beach.
I can tell that you're on some kind of internet connection. Not a very good one, either.
Skype. Is not bad?
It's not great.
Yeah.
Look, go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. No question. I have all the answers.
Okay. Well, then give us one.
Okay, give us one. Okay, one answer. No need to worry about oil, because in 20 years, 90% of the world is going to be covered in water anyway.
Need oil. You're not Skyping very well.
We need solar power.
Okay, there you are. So, James, there is one answer.
Well, global warming is happening. Climate change is happening. There's very little disagreement in the scientific community about that. And we're going to be facing some additional problems. You know, in my opinion, this has most significance for our food production issues, because not only are we going to be facing the loss of oil and gas inputs, but we're going to be facing some very strange and perhaps devastating climate issues, you know, years of drought, the inability to grow certain crops that we have been accustomed to growing in certain parts of the year, desertification of places that only receive marginal amounts of rainfall. These things are all going to be part of the bigger picture of the emergency that we're facing.
James, how much of a possibility is there that your timetable is askew? That I'm not disputing what you're saying is coming, but that it may be a little farther away than you're suggesting.
I think that, if anything, the problems that we're going to encounter with oil are closer. And I think because of this reason, that you don't have to run out of oil or even go very far down the arc of depletion before the major systems that we depend on start to destabilize and wobble and mutually amplify each other's distress.
Mm-hmm.
So that when, you know, the price of oil goes up even moderately, that's when the big box retail stores start to, you know, have trouble with their business equation. That's
right.
When the
right.
agricultural producers start to have trouble with justifying their production. That's when people start losing jobs. That's when the air starts coming out of the economy. That's when people discover that the investments they've made may not be worth what they thought they were. And all sorts of things start affecting each other and wobbling, and pretty soon you find yourself, you know, in the beginning, in a very, very difficult economic situation. You know, and then you're confronted with the realities of really how you're going to use these infrastructures of daily life that are really seriously failing you.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with James Howard Kunstler. Hello.
Well, good morning, Art and James. This is Carrie in California, and what I want to say is there is a way of making extra fuel by just breaking the molecules down of water into hydrogen and oxygen. I've already been working towards that. I've completely making my own power now in my own motorhome and living in it. And, hey, as soon as I can get the other parts I need to convert and start making my own hydrogen, I'm going to.
All right. Well, he's not the only one talking about hydrogen, James. The president had a lot to say about hydrogen. What, how much of the equation is it?
Well, we're unlikely to have a hydrogen economy, at least the way the president described it. We can make hydrogen and we can use hydrogen, but it's almost, you know, you don't, you get less energy from the hydrogen that you, than you, you have to put more energy into the process of getting the hydrogen than you get from the hydrogen itself. And that's a, you know, a general truth of the system.
In other words, it's a net loss.
It's a net loss. Hydrogen's not really a fuel source. It's just a sort of a carrier for the energy that's produced by something else, generally electricity. It takes electricity to separate hydrogen from the oxygen in water, and you get less energy from the hydrogen than you put in the electricity.
Well, then the president has to know that. If he knows that, then what's he doing? Just trying to calm everybody down, or what?
Yeah, and I think there was also this idea that we would construct an enormous number of nuclear electric generating plants to get the hydrogen, and that we would be running the easy motoring system of America, the interstate highway and all of its furnishings on hydrogen. But I think what you find really with hydrogen is that it doesn't scale. That's sort of an engineering term. It doesn't scale. And it's true of a lot of the alternative fuel things. You can do them on a small basis. You may be able to do them on a household basis or even on a neighborhood basis. But we're not going to be able to run the systems of American society as presently constituted on these things.
I would take it right now. Your book, The Long Emergency, is available Amazon.com, all the bookstores. That
sort of Borders, thing. Barnes & Noble, the independent booksellers. Let's not forget them, the people organized under BookSense.com.
How's it doing so far?
Well, I don't know. I think it's coming out of the box pretty well. You know, there are a lot of people out there who recognize there's a problem, who would like to hear it articulated in a rational way, and are interested in where we're going and what we're going to do, and especially the young people out there who are going to be living most of their lives in an America that's quite different from the one that we've been used to.
And do you think, based on this information, people are beginning to make personal choices, actual decisions?
Oh, yes. I get emails every day from people who are making real plans to move to different places, you know, people who are going to leave Los Angeles, for example, and recognize that that may be one of the more difficult places to be, people who are thinking of new trades and vocations, people who are in college learning things that they know that they will never be able to make a career of, like, you know, public relations or... Hmm. Marketing, marketing, things that are not going to be vocations 30 years from now when they're, you know, when they're my age.
All right. Well, we're going to have to hold it right there. We're out of time, but boy, you sure laid it on the line, brother.
Well, it was a pleasure to be here and to talk to your audience, and I hope that you all got something out of it.
Thank you, my friend.
And I wish you good luck in the long emergency.
Thank you. I'll need it based on where I am. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, James Howard Kunstler, everybody. That's it. That's the weekend. See you next weekend. It's been a great one from the high desert, the doomed high desert. I'm Art Bell.